True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you, let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
Oh, and first pitch, reaching deep left field. This is way back. Welcome on.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, and Chris.
I'm not one to kick somebody when they're down, but Cincinnati Reds, I mean, what are we doing? Welcome in to Fantasy Baseball Today on Monday, May 16th. Frank Sample joined by Scott White and Chris Towers. Today on the show, we had a no-hitter, kind of. Waiver wire add-o-meter. We haven't done that yet this season. Our pools pitching a game. Fun. And I will not watch another Charlie Morton start this season. But let's jump right in.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
You know, first of all, how are you guys doing, man? How's the weekend? What's going on, Scotty?
You know, this is my least favorite question that you ask me. I don't know why you're asking me.
I haven't asked in a while.
I had a great weekend.
Let's go, Chris.
I went to the movies twice on Friday. I saw two different multiversal movies.
Did you pay for both of them?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah. Right. I went at different times, too. It wasn't like I just sat through two movies. I went once during the afternoon because I'm off on Fridays. And then my wife and I went and saw Doctor Strange in the evening. Doctor Strange was good, really fun. They let Sam Raimi do weird Sam Raimi stuff. I don't know if you guys have ever seen the Evil Dead movies, but they are like truly bizarre horror movies. The third one is barely a horror movie. It's fun though. The one I saw before that, Everything Everywhere All at Once. Oh my goodness, this movie is so good, you guys. I cannot recommend it more highly. Go see it while it's still in theaters. I can't say anything about it, except that it is just delightful and absurd and ridiculous. Go see it. It's so good.
All right. So appreciate that. And I think those words that you used to describe that movie, it's a pretty good way to describe Hunter Green, right? Delightful, absurd. The Reds lose 1-0 despite throwing a combined no-hitter. So they walked the bases loaded in the eighth inning on Sunday, then allowed a run to score on an RBI groundout by Cabrian Hayes. But overall, Hunter Green was still pretty damn good in the start. He threw 7 1/3 no-hit innings. Of course, he gets charged with the run. 5 walks, 9 strikeouts, 15 swinging strikes on 118 pitches. He is 64% rostered. Shout out to you, Scott. Fortune favors the brave, coming through big time for you.
My pick?
Yeah, Hunter Green. Last week, that was your pick.
Oh, last, okay, yeah, for the 2 starts. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that did work out, didn't it?
Shout out to you. So what do we do with this, Scott? He's 64% rostered, Hunter Green. He's at the Blue Jays this week. Do you just kind of pick him back up and see where it goes?
I mean, there's clearly lots of upside here, so probably does need to be rostered by somebody in your league. It does kind of feel like it's kind of a tightrope walk here. He's seemed to learn, now 2 starts in a row, that if he emphasizes the slider over that very hard but very straight fastball, that good things happen. It's worked 2 starts in a row, but we've seen other pitchers try to navigate this same approach, and it might have a short shelf life. It might have a short shelf life, particularly if he's struggling with his control like he did in this start. I mean, yes, He allowed no hits, but five walks is an awful lot of walks. And, you know, he's not going to be able to get away with that every start because he's not going to allow no hits every start. So, yeah, I think he probably deserves to be rostered, but I don't have a high degree of trust in Hunter Greene all of a sudden. I think you still want to use him cautiously with the right matchups and not make him an instrumental part of your pitching staff yet.
All right. Hunter Greene, remember back on May 5th, he got destroyed by the Brewers. In two starts since then, he's allowed just two earned runs, but he does have nine walks during that span. Chris, do you like the idea of adding Hunter Greene again after this start, but maybe not throwing him back in your lineup at the Blue Jays this week?
Yeah, I think that's fine. I mean, look, the thing with him is he appears to have one really, really excellent pitch in the slider. And then the fastball, the quality of contact numbers are really bad on this pitch, despite the fact that, like, he was a starting pitcher today who had the five hardest thrown balls in Major League Baseball today. That is really rare. You might see one starting pitcher up there most days, and he had all five. And I don't know, maybe the top 10. The leaderboard only goes to five. But so he throws really incredibly hard, but like Scott said, it's been really hittable, and it was in the minors as well. And so he's got a decent whiff rate with it, but an expected WOBA of 512 with his fastball. He's given up nine home runs with the pitch. That's really, really bad. And so it's going to limit how effective he can be. But if that just becomes a normal bad pitch instead of, I mean, right now it's been like worst in baseball in terms of the quality of contact, then there's significant upside here. So, yeah, I definitely think Hunter Greene is roster worthy.
All right, let's lump Hunter Greene back in with some other waiver wire pitchers from over the weekend. And Scott, we'll start with you. Do you like Hunter Greene ahead of all of these names? Is there anyone on this list that you also like? Marco Gonzalez makes it three solid starts in a row. He gave up one run over six innings against the Mets on Friday. Michael Lorenzen, fourth quality start this season. He was at Oakland, seven innings, one run, three strikeouts. Bruce Zimmerman has now allowed three earned runs or fewer in all seven of his starts. Nick Pivetta has allowed just one earned run over his last two starts. And then Martin Perez, his fifth straight quality start on Sunday, this one against Boston, six innings, one run, seven strikeouts this time out. Scott, do you like Hunter Greene ahead of all of these names?
Yeah, I would put him ahead of all of those names. I think the most interesting apart from Greene are Lorenzen, who, you know, that. Trying to find the number I'm trying to cite here. He actually has like pretty good predictor stats in terms of the ERA, even though there hasn't been a lot of strikeouts, even though there hasn't been a great swinging strike rate. He's, you know, getting a lot of ground balls and you know what? They're not as good as
his issue.
His xERA, I guess, is the main one.
The issue for Lorenzen is he actually has decent swing and miss rates or whiff rates on his pitches. The problem is he's just got massive platoon splits. I know he had a strikeout rate below 10% against lefties coming into this start. I'm not sure, you know, exactly how much better or worse that got, but that seems to be the big thing holding him back. But I like a lot of the component parts for Lorenzen.
And we might be to the point where some people, I'm not saying he's must add, but I do think maybe Martin Perez needs to be picked up in some leagues. He has really leaned into the ground ball tendencies this year, unlike ever before. And while his numbers are obviously unsustainable, could he be a decent play most of the time? I think it's possible. I think it's possible. And I like him more at this point than like the Bruce Zimmermans of the world. Some of these other guys you named, Nick Pivetta, Marco Gonzalez. I mean, I don't think Martin Perez's upside is in a different class from those pitchers, but I'm developing a higher level of trust in him, I would say, than those pitchers.
By the way, Lorenzen has five strikeouts to eight walks in 64 plate appearances against left-handed batters. So until he figures that out, there's really only so good he can be.
I will point out with Lorenzen, really like the matchup this week. He's going up against Oakland once again. obviously it's a great matchup. 42% rostered is Michael Lorenzen. And if you play in a points league, he has SPARP eligibility. So that helps his case out as well. Martin Perez, by the way, 53% ground ball rate, Scott. So I know you referenced that. That would be his highest since 2016. So
yeah. And he's throwing the sinker a lot more. So it's not just by happenstance that that's happening to him. It seems to be a deliberate aim of Perez's. I do want to mention, though, like if you're talking about waiver wire pitches, two guys who didn't pitch this weekend that I would take over Hunter Green or any of these guys are Josh Winder still, who's less rostered than Green, and his teammate, who's beginning a rehab assignment, Bailey Ober, is widely available. So, you know, if you're debating Green or someone else, those are the someone else's you should be considering.
All right. Martin Perez, by the way, he's 36% rostered, so widely available. He's at Houston this week. If you add him, sure, take a shot, but probably don't want to have him in your lineup for that matchup. A few other names, waiver wire pitchers that emerged this weekend. These are more so for deeper leagues, but interesting nonetheless. Chase Silseth. An interesting name. Don't try to say it too fast. He's 11% rostered. He's a prospect for the Angels, and he threw six shutout innings with one hit, two walks, four strikeouts at Oakland on Friday. Jake Junis has now allowed two earned runs or fewer in all four of his starts slash appearances. He's been a follower, I believe, or a bulk reliever multiple times. Zach Thompson, two scoreless outings in a row. Rich Hill has allowed two earned runs over his last four starts. And Justin Steele had a pretty interesting start on Sunday. Six innings, two runs, 10 strikeouts to two walks. Chris, anyone catch your eye here? Chase Silseth, Jake Junis, Zach Thompson, Rich Hill, Justin Steele.
I think Chase Silseth is the most interesting of the group by far. First player from the 2021 draft class to make it to the majors. And the stuff looked pretty good. You know, he was someone who was, he was like a 11th round pick or something like that, but he signed for way over slot. He got like $600,000. So he was clearly more talented than the slot that he was drafted as. And the splitter looked really good. I mean, the fastball, you know, he came out averaging 96 miles per hour with his fastball, but the splitter, he threw it 35% of the time, got six swings and misses with it. A bunch of weak contact with both of those pitches. So yeah, I think Chase Silseth, is he staying in the rotation or did he already get sent back down? Because that was a doubleheader.
He hasn't gotten sent back down. They, you know, the Angels like to go six man a lot because it gives Ohtani an extra day. They didn't have to this week, but because they didn't send Silseth down.
You would think he's staying in the rotation.
Yeah, you would think. And I removed Noah Syndergaard from the two-star pitcher rankings in that expectation.
Yeah, no, he's. I'd probably rather take a chance on him than Martin Perez.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Just on the off chance and over Michael Lorenzen as well. So basically everyone but Hunter Green that we've talked about so far. And I think Jake Junis is pretty interesting. The fact that he's throwing that slider 56% of the time, the Giants clearly, you know, have a well-earned at this point reputation for getting the most out of, you know, mid-career veteran acquisitions like him. And so his slider's been by far his best pitch throughout his career. I don't know how good he can be with this approach. You know, there's, like Scott said, with the slider-heavy approach for Hunter Green, you might reach a point of diminishing returns. But yeah, I'm interested in Jake Junis right now. I think I'd rather have him than Martin Perez too.
I will mention with Justin Steele, again, he had the 10 strikeouts on Sunday. That was against Arizona. Faces the Diamondbacks again this week. So if you need a streamer in a deeper league, 11% rostered. I noticed in this start, Justin Steele, he lowered his four-seam fastball usage about 20% compared to his season mark. Lots more sinkers and curveballs, and ultimately it worked out well for him here on Sunday. That was a very long, oh my goodness gracious, for just Hunter Green. But Scott, who would you like to highlight from the weekend?
How about old Chuck E. Cheese? Charlie Morton making us all look like geniuses.
You love to see it.
You love to see. Yeah, against the Padres, two hits allowed in six innings, nine strikeouts, 15 swinging strikes on just 83 pitches. He has now allowed two hits in each of his last two starts. But this is the one where the whiffs came back. Like we wanted to see, like we love to see. And I think this is the turnaround. I think you, if you'd benched him, you need to get him back in your lineup and just ride him out till the end. Because nothing looked that wrong with him just in terms of arsenal or like velocity, obviously. None of that. There were no obvious red flags. I think it was just having trouble with the feel of some of his pitches, having some trouble spotting some of his pitches, just normal build-up type of stuff. But I think he's ready to roll now. Is Charlie Morton?
Yeah, he looked fantastic in this start. I wouldn't know because I didn't watch it live. I watched the highlights afterwards. But from what I saw, the curveball was on, looked filthy, finally able to command the fastball. That was a huge issue for him early in the season. And he broke a streak of five straight starts, Charlie Morton did, with three-plus walks. So getting down to just one walk in this start, the whiffs are up, the strikeouts, obviously, for Charlie Morton. So get him back in your lineup. On the other side, by the way, Sean Manaea, you know, gives up some hits and some runs, 7-plus innings, but 6 hits, 3 runs, 12 strikeouts, 23 swinging strikes on 104 pitches. I noticed his...
I can't believe his ERA is 3.77. I thought he was pitching much better than that. Has he had just like one big blow-up start?
He had a few starts where he gave up some runs. I don't think it was anything too crazy.
He's only had one worse than a quality start. He gave up 6 earned runs in 4 1/3, yeah, against the Dodgers. Everything else, yeah, has been a quality start or better.
Yeah,
that, well, I mean, even in this start, 3 earned runs in 7 innings, that's not going to lower that ERA that much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As good as the stuff was. And you were about to say, Frank, his velocity was up a mile per hour and a half.
Yeah.
And so the lost velocity suddenly came back. And I feel like we saw that with a few pitchers this weekend.
Yeah, Robbie Ray is one that we'll mention too. Bunch of whiffs, mm-hmm, velocity up. So overall, I think a good sign for Robbie Ray. But this was part of the reason why I was in on Manaea coming into the season, was his velocity being up last year and the swinging strike rate also being up. His swinging strike rate right now is a career high, 13.4%. So I know the overall ERA doesn't look too good. The estimators look a lot better for Sean Manaea. Very encouraged by what I saw from both him and Charlie Morton this weekend. Chris, oh my goodness gracious, for you.
Yeah, I think we got to talk about Tarik Skubal, who had an excellent start against the Orioles, 11 strikeouts over 6 shutout innings, 2 walks, only 2 batted balls over 95 miles per hour. He had 21 swinging strikes on 100 pitches total. It was a very, very good start for Tarik Skubal, who I've been skeptical of so far this season, but he keeps pitching really well, and he, at least in the early going, seems to have fixed his biggest issue from last season, which was the quality of contact. He was one of the worst in baseball in terms of quality of contact allowed, 455 expected wOBA on contact last season. This season it's down to 356, and we know that given the environment that we're playing in, it's relatively even better than that, because quality of contact is not as quality as it appears based on last season. And he's made some interesting changes to his approach. He's lowered his four-seam fastball usage. That makes sense. He had a 429 expected wOBA allowed with that pitch. This season, it's down to 206, which would be, I mean, one of the best pitches in baseball if he was able to sustain that. So I don't know how sustainable that will end up being. Quality of contact, batted ball metrics for pitchers, those take a long time to stabilize. Pitchers don't have nearly as much control over, you know, the quality of contact, where that contact goes, line drives, ground balls, as hitters do. So, you know, it's still early and it's still fair to be skeptical. And the fact that his strikeout rate isn't dramatically improved from last year, it's actually a little bit worse, gives me reason to be skeptical still. But I don't know. I can't be too skeptical about Tarik Skubal right now. He's looked really, really good over his last few starts especially.
All right. I think it could be a less is more situation too, Chris. Just throwing that four-seam fastball less. Maybe that's allowed it to play up better, along with the sinker and the slider and everything else he's doing right now. Again, that is Tarik Skubal. I will say get him in your lineups this week. He's at Cleveland. He's only 66% started. Cleveland is 27th in weighted on base average against left-handed pitching this season. How about just an oh my goodness gracious game? Sunday night baseball, the Cards win 15-6. Just an awesome game all around. I guess Not if you had Carlos Rodon in your lineups. I'm sorry. But Paul Goldschmidt went 3-for-4 with his fourth homer. The batting average is now up to .312. Nolan Arenado hit his eighth home run. Yadier Molina had a big game, 2-for-3 with his second home run. Adam Wainwright off the COVID IL, 6 innings, 2 runs, 5 strikeouts. Move over Ohtani. Albert Pujols pitching in the ninth inning. That was awesome to see. Of course, he gave up 4 runs and 2 home runs, but it was fun nonetheless. And then, you know, Carlos Rodon, he gave up 8 runs on 10 hits over 3 2/3 innings. I don't see anything that stands out that I'm actually worried about. I really just think that the Cardinals did a fantastic job. They jumped on him very early in the count, and they were just attacking those first pitches, and they did a great job. So I really just think it's a credit to the Cardinals. Chris, anything here to actually be worried about with Rodon?
No, I mean, the Cardinals do hit lefties well, and his velocity was fine. His spin rate was where it normally is. I don't really, like, they didn't really even hit him all that hard overall. He had an 87-mile-per-hour average exit velocity allowed, so I'm skeptical that this is, that the Cardinals have given the blueprint to hitting Carlos Rodon, given how good he's been over the past couple of seasons, so I don't think there's anything to be worried about there.
All right, let's move over to some hitters. The waiver wire hitter ad-o-meter. That's a long one, but let's calibrate this thing right now. 10 must add, should be owned in 100% of leagues. I guess we could just do this in 10% increments of if it's 5 out of 10, then he should be 50% rostered. Anyway, something like that. 1, you don't need to add this player. Let's start with Yuli Gurriel, who had a big weekend. He's gotten off to a really slow start and then really got going. 8 hits, 2 homers, 1 steal this weekend. He's 66% rostered, has 7 games this upcoming week against the Rangers and at the Red Sox. Scott, we'll start with you. 1 to 10, Yuli Gurriel, the ad-o-meter.
I'm going to say 8 on Yuli Gurriel. He's defending batting champ in the AL. Let's not forget. Great lineup context. Astros still lean on him every day, even at 37 years of age. Slow start had nothing to do with that age, I don't think, because his strikeout rate is like 11%. It's as good as it usually is. And yeah, he seems to be heating up. So, first base is a position with a lot of redundancies, and it may be hard to fit him on every roster. I also think he's best suited for points leagues since he has the great contact rate without the big power you expect from a first baseman. So that's why it's only 8. But it definitely needs to be up from 66.
I probably should have lined this up so that Scott could talk about Brendan Rodgers. You could still talk about
him. No, I actually think it's better.
All right. All right,
Scott, Chris. Scott's incapable of thinking clearly about Brendan Rodgers.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, let's hear what you have to say about him then, Chris. Brendan Rodgers also has a big weekend. 7 hits, 1 homer, 5 RBI. He's 60% rostered. He's got 6 games this week. They are all in Coors Field. What is the ad-o-meter on Brendan Rodgers?
I think he probably should be like a 7 or an 8. I'm not going to say a 10. I don't think he needs to be 100% rostered because, look, the underlying numbers for him are still pretty bad. Expected WOBA on contact is 362. It was 364 last season. And, you know, as much as we liked him last season, he was fringy for pretty long stretches. And I don't know if he can hit righties well enough to, you know, really be an impactful everyday player. He had a 733 OPS against them last season. This season, I believe it's under 500, which I think he's better than that. But quality of contact metrics are all pretty middling for Brendan Rodgers. I do worry that he's kind of just a guy, but just a guy who plays half his games in Coors Field probably should be, you know, 80% rostered at least. So I'll say that.
Hey, Randall Grichuk was just a guy, and now look what he's doing with the Rockies.
He's down 260 now.
Oh, yeah. He's,
we finally got people on board with adding Randall Grichuk, and then he went in the slump.
Nice little nosedive there. Scott, would you drop someone like Gavin Lux for Brendan Rodgers right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's fine.
Okay.
By the way, Gavin Lux's numbers have taken his quality of contact and underlying numbers have taken a complete nosedive. It's startling how bad his expected WOBA is down to 259.
Yikes.
And again, that's likely inflated by the current offensive environment.
Yeah. So, all right, Gavin Lux, someone you could probably drop. Can you drop him for this next player? Let's find out. Royce Lewis went 2-for-4 on Friday. He had his first career home run, a grand slam. He's been playing every day with Carlos Correa on the IL. 49% rostered is Royce Lewis. He's got 6 road games this week. Scott, where is Royce Lewis on the ad-o-meter?
Maybe like a 6. You know, it's Carlos Correa is about to come back Monday, and Royce Lewis was on the roster before Correa went on the IL, but Correa wasn't able to play. And obviously he'll be able to play Monday. So we haven't seen if the Twins are willing to move Royce Lewis somewhere else on the diamond to keep him around. They may just send him down when Correa gets called up. They could potentially send down Jose Miranda instead, who hasn't been doing much. But that's only if they're willing to play Lewis somewhere other than shortstop. And he's played a lot of other positions in the minors, so they may very well do that with him. But we won't know until we see it. So for now, I'm going to say 6 for Royce Lewis. If he sticks around, then I'll up it to 7.
All right, Chris, you get Jorge Soler. 8 hits over his last 8 games, including 4 home runs, slowly creeping back up. He is down to 61% rostered. The addometer on Jorge Soler.
I would say 7 or 8. He's not a must roster player, but we've seen when Jorge Soler gets hot, he has a tendency to get really, really hot. And sometimes he gets hot for an entire half season and, you know, hits 25 home runs in 60 games or whatever it was in 2019. Sorry. So yeah, I think he's someone who, you know, when he's rolling deserves to be rostered, and just, you probably have a spot in your outfield for Jorge Soler. So yeah, I'll go ahead and add him.
Yeah.
I think I'd go 10 for Soler in Roto specifically.
Sure.
But he may be rostered in all the Roto leagues already. 61%. That may basically cover all those. Anyway.
But I think he's a fringe starter in head to head points leagues. Cause
yeah,
you know, he opened the season around 40th for me in the rankings, and I've moved him down, but there's not a lot of guys I've wanted to move ahead of him. So I think he's absolutely a fringe 3 outfielder guy.
He is, in terms of impacting the ball well, hard. Like, he's in the upper class of that and mm-hmm. consistently has been. The production hasn't been as consistent as the Giancarlo Stantons and Aaron Judge's, but he's in that same conversation for quality of contact. And if we're saying quality of contact is more important now than ever, I think Jorge Soler in 5 outfielder leagues, in Roto leagues, is definitely somebody you're going to want to cling to through the ups and downs. Because remember, it was the second half last year when he finally caught fire. From like the last week of July on, his last week with the Royals through the end of the season, he hit 27 home runs, I believe it was. It was like a 48 homer pace.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen him have a 48 homer season before. So, like, yeah, Jorge Soler is, if you're worried about your team's power supply, he should be able to help with it at some point. Maybe it's beginning.
All right. For those in deeper leagues, Scott, any of these names catch your eye? Let's say 5 outfielder leagues. Will Myers, he had 5 hits this weekend, including a home run. Travis DeMeritt, 5 hits, including 2 walks. He's been leading off with Ronald Acuna banged up. Cole Calhoun had a double dong on Sunday, including 6 hits total this weekend. Eli White for the Texas Rangers, he has 4 steals over his last 5 games. The Rangers are usually pretty aggressive on the base paths as well. And then Jonathan Daza had 5 hits this weekend with the Rockies. He's now batting .383. Kind of empty batting average, but he's got all these games at Coors Field this week. Scott, any interest in deeper leagues? Daza, Eli White, Cole Calhoun, Travis DeMeritt, Will Myers.
My favorite has been DeMeritt because it seems like he's going to stick in the Braves lineup with Eddie Rosario out. Even when Acuna's been there, DeMeritt's stayed in the lineup. He's tended to. And yeah, he hits the ball legitimately hard. He may not hit it enough. The strikeout rate's been a little better this year. He also runs pretty well, so he hasn't stolen the base yet, but you could see that becoming a contribution for him. leave him for the deeper leagues, yeah. But I think he's the most interesting of this group.
Okay. Eli White was someone I was adding in those 15-team roto leagues, five outfielders, just because speed is so hard to come by. He's already got seven steals. I don't think he's actually that great, but the Rangers play seven games this week. Again, the name there, Eli White. Chris, any interest in these in deeper leagues? Mike Moustakas had a double dong on Friday. The problem, the Reds only have five games this upcoming week. Miguel Cabrera had six hits this weekend, including two home runs. He's now batting .297. And another name for speed, Andrew Velasquez, who's been playing consistently at shortstop for the Angels. His last seven games, he's batting .348, one homer, two steals, and he has six steals overall in the season in 29 games played. Chris, any interest? Moustakas, Miguel Cabrera, Andrew Velasquez.
Velasquez in roto leagues just for stolen base potential, but I don't think there's all much there beyond that. Moustakas, I don't know. He's hitting home runs, but his underlying numbers are pretty mediocre. But the underlying numbers have always been pretty mediocre for Mike Moustakas, and he's always been someone who's kind of maximized what he has by pulling the ball a ton. And I don't know, maybe he can continue doing that, but no, I'm pretty skeptical
of
Moustakas.
Scott, are you looking to add any Giants or Mets hitters for this week because they each have a series in Coors Field? That would include names like Mike Yastrzemski, Evan Longoria, Luis Gonzalez, who's actually quietly been pretty good for the Giants this year. Mark Canha, also 44% rostered. Any interest in those names?
Not those names, but Darren Ruff was the one I had in my top 10 sleeper hitters column. He is hit safely now. Oh, he was out of the lineup today, but that's rare for him. He's close to an everyday player for the Giants.
I'm not so sure, Scott, because Darren Ruff, it looks like he has been playing, but he hasn't started in five straight games. So he's just getting like pinch hit appearances, I guess, which is weird.
Oh, he's getting multiple at-bats.
Yeah, I heard on the broadcast that they pinch hit their cleanup hitter in the sixth inning the other day, which is, I don't know, the most Giants thing you could do, I guess. But yeah, he hasn't started five straight, but he is still kind of getting at bats.
That's annoying.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, then I guess it's hard to recommend him. Sorry.
All right, no problem. Let's take a break. But first, if you listen to us on Spotify, I think about a year ago, they now allow you to leave five-star ratings. Well, any star ratings, but we would appreciate a five-star rating if you listen to us on Spotify. Please make that happen. Let's take a break, and we'll return right after this. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. If you've ever been in the market for a new home, you know home shopping can be a lot. There's so much you don't know and so much you need to know. What are the neighborhoods like? What are the schools like? Who is the agent who knows the listing or neighborhood best? And why can't all this information just be in one place? Well, now it is on Homes.com. As somebody who's been through this, I can tell you these features are so, so incredibly valuable. They've got comprehensive neighborhood guides and detailed reports about local schools, and their agent directory helps you see the agent's current listings and sales history. The area you live in is just as important as the house itself. You can get to know a neighborhood without ever setting foot in it. Say you're a really active person. You could find out about the nearest parks. Do they have a baseball field? Maybe you want to join a softball league like Chris and I play in. Also, Homes.com collaboration tools makes it easier than ever to share all this information with your family. It's a whole cul-de-sac of home shopping information all at your fingertips. Homes.com, we've done your homework. The news and notes. Byron Buxton is playing through knee issues, and the Twins will be measured with his usage until it's healed. Sounds like maybe they might not let him run very much, but he still managed to hit two home runs this weekend, so The bat still plays. Chris Bryant will start a rehab assignment at AAA on Tuesday. Could be back this Friday. He's on the IL with back stiffness. Jared Kelnick was optioned back to AAA this weekend. Optimal timing, huh? They wouldn't let him face his former team in the New York Mets. Suspicious. Anyway, he was batting 140 with a 37.5% strikeout rate. Chris, is it okay to drop Jared Kelnick?
Yeah, it's definitely okay. In like 15 team leagues, I'm still hanging on to Joe Adell, so I would still hang on to Jared Kelnick. But yeah, he's droppable in anything 12 or shorter or smaller.
All right. Steven Strasburg threw two innings in a simulated game at extended spring training on Friday. Miguel Sano was transferred to the 60-day IL. He underwent surgery to repair a torn meniscus in his left knee in early May. Alex Kirilloff was optioned back to AAA. He was batting just 172 over 10 games. Scott, is it okay to drop Alex Kirilloff?
Yes.
Matt Manning needs another rehab start while Casey Mize will have his rehab slowed down. Alex Fajardo will make another start on Monday against the Tampa Bay Rays. I would guess, depending on what happens with Matt Manning and Mize, you know, if Fajardo pitches well, they'll probably give him another start in the majors later on this week. Mauricio Dubon was traded to the Astros on Saturday in exchange for catcher Michael Papierski. That's what we'll go with. Robinson Cano will officially signed on with the Padres. I believe he started on Sunday at second base for them. Yankees manager Aaron Boone recently indicated that Domingo Herman could stretch out to work as a starter when he begins his minor league rehab assignment. He's currently on the 60-day IL with a shoulder injury. I guess that would assume that they go six-man rotation, or obviously we're not hoping anyone gets hurt, but these things happen. Scott, are you looking to stash Domingo Herman anywhere?
I don't think the upside's so high that you should be using a roster spot on him unless you've got unlimited IL spots.
Yeah. Maybe it's like an AL-only kind of thing for now. But
yeah.
We've seen times where he's had value, but just a name to pay attention to. Some prospect notes. Riley Green was cleared for baseball activities after being examined by doctors on Thursday and has begun running on flat ground. He fractured his foot in early April. CJ Abrams has gone 5-for-15 with 3 homers, 9 RBI, 6 runs scored, and 2 steals in 3 games since being sent down to AAA. He's 34% rostered. I don't think he's going to be back that soon, but obviously it's good to see him hitting well. Him and Joe Adell, they got sent down, and so far both looking pretty good.
I think they're both more stashable, especially Adell, because Adell could be back real soon. I think they're both more stashable than Kelnick and Kirilloff.
Fair enough. These names were placed on the IL this weekend, and really out of nowhere on Friday, Clayton Kershaw with inflammation in his right SI joint, which connects the base of the spine to the hip bones, which sounds very scary. He has no structural damage, and the Dodgers hope that he'll be back after a minimum stay on the IL. In fact, he played catch on Sunday and is scheduled to throw a bullpen session on Wednesday. That is Clayton Kershaw. Tyler McGill, also out of nowhere, with right biceps tendonitis. He'll be shut down from throwing for a few days before being reevaluated. Might explain his most recent start, where Tyler McGill got destroyed. Unfortunate there. Jesus Luzardo went on the IL with a left forearm strain, which also sounds terrible. Scott, what are we thinking here? Max Meyer, Edward Cabrera, maybe fill that rotation spot for Luzardo?
Well, I mean, my excitement was immediately for Max Meyer. I mean, it wasn't excitement at first. I was disappointed, because you're right. It does sound like the sort of injury that might be a precursor to ligament damage, but the Marlins and Luzardo himself don't seem to be talking that way. They're thinking it's going to be a minimal 15-day stint, more like he felt a little something, so this is to prevent it from becoming something more situation. Precautionary measure, you might say. And if that's the case, you know, Max Meyer's last start Friday, I believe it was, wasn't very good.
Mm-hmm.
And Cristina De Nicola, who is Marlins beat writer for MLB.com, because Meyer's not on the 40-man roster, she kind of thinks it won't be him.
Although
and
I will
because,
say,
and because they're thinking a short-term absence.
They don't, I believe they don't need, like, I think they have only 39 guys on their 40-man roster right now.
Well, she said it was full.
No, maybe that changed then.
Yeah, maybe it changed. I don't know. Yeah, so I mean, I'm not saying don't pick up Meyer. I think he's been one of the top prospects to stash for a while now, and all we could do is speculate. I mean, Luzardo could suffer a setback, or the Marlins could just say, whatever, we're tired of Eliezer Hernandez, let's give Meyer a shot. But I don't know. I don't know that this is necessarily going to be the impetus for it.
For what it's worth, Edward Cabrera also wasn't great in his most recent start, and he hasn't thrown. He finally hit 90 pitches in his most recent start, but he got a delayed start to the season. Cody Petit's going to be in the rotation at least for one turn. I can't imagine that lasts. So
he was going to start Monday, Petit, but then they moved up.
Yeah.
They moved up Sandy Alcantara instead. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, he's starting Tuesday, I believe.
Okay. Right?
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. I would think Max Meyer's going to get a chance sooner or later.
Come on.
Sooner rather than later.
Well, yeah, he's definitely going to get a chance sooner than later, but
it may not be Tuesday.
Right.
We'll see, but like another bad Eliezer Hernandez start, you know, then I think it starts to get more interesting.
These other players also went on the IL this weekend. Manny Margot with a right hamstring strain. Michael Pineda with a right middle finger fracture. Ryan Mountcastle with a left wrist strain. Austin Meadows, after he experienced dizziness, lightheadedness, and nausea on Sunday. James McCann will miss 6 weeks with a broken hamate bone. Josh Naylor was placed on the COVID IL on Friday. Joey Wendell with a right hamstring strain, and Nico Horner with a sprained right ankle. Andrelton Simmons was activated. Should you start or sit these banged up players? Ronald Acuna has missed 4 straight games with a groin injury. He got an MRI on Saturday, but it didn't reveal anything serious. Scott, what are we thinking about Acuna this week?
I probably would not start him in 3 outfielder leagues, but 5 outfielder leagues, probably yes.
All right. Willy Adames left Sunday's game with a left ankle sprain and a left ankle injury, rather. X-rays came back negative. Chris, what do you think about Adames?
Luckily, Monday's first lineup lock, I think, is 6:40 first game, so hopefully we'll have some details about that. But yeah, I would prefer not to, I guess. Mm-hmm.
And the Brewers...
Absent more details.
The Brewers do play at 7:40, so we should have their lineup by the time lineups are getting ready to lock. So
I think his Adames has been classified as a sprain, so that could still be, unless I got the wrong guy.
Sprains are that's one where it's always like it could be one day, it could be an IL stint, and you just kind of you don't really know.
Let me make sure because he's the ankle, right? Mm-hmm. I don't have it in my notes.
Yeah,
I'll look it up.
They said. He left Sunday's win due to a left ankle sprain. That is Willy Adames. Yeah.
A sprained ankle could still definitely put him on the IL. So I'd be wary of starting Adames unless we hear good news.
Jeremy Pena has missed 3 straight with right knee discomfort. What are we thinking there?
I mean, it's still a 10-day IL for hitters. So you miss that many games in a row. I'd try to avoid starting him too.
Okay. Yep. Blake Snell will be activated and make his season debut Wednesday against the Phillies. He threw 59 pitches in his last rehab outing. Chris, should we maybe wait and see with Blake Snell first?
He's been really good on his minor league rehab assignment. 19 strikeouts in 13 innings. I think he's allowed 1 hit. So, you know, hopefully that portends good things. But I'm not starting him in tout wars. I've got the likes of George Kirby, Alex Cobb, 2-star Merrill Kelly, and a 2-star Alex Wood ahead of him. So, not looking to get him in there right now.
Lucas Giolito went on the COVID IL Friday, but these COVID situations are really tough because it could be 2 weeks, it could be 2 days. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to figure out. Scott, should we play it safe with Giolito?
He had symptoms, right? So I think it's going to be closer to the long stint for him.
Yeah, that's unfortunate too because he recently came back from an injury. He was pitching pretty well. Mm-hmm. That is Lucas Giolito. A few hitters here. Just pay attention early in the week. See if they're in the lineup. Austin Hayes, Joey Votto, Jorge Mateo. Those three are currently a little bit banged up and or returning from injury, I guess, in Joey Votto's case. What do we make of these 3 pitchers from the weekend? Shane Bieber, solid bounce back, 6 innings, 1 run, 7 strikeouts to 3 walks at the Twins. His fastball velo was up a bit, only 7 swinging strikes. So I just trying to figure out Bieber is tough right now. Julio Urias, he was hit pretty hard on Saturday against the Phillies. He gave up 8 runs. 5 of those were earned. He only had 3 strikeouts, 0 walks. But he's now had 4 strikeouts or fewer in 5 of 7 starts. That's Julio Urias. And then Robbie Ray, a mixed bag on Sunday. He gave up 5 runs against the Mets, but he had 27 swinging strikes and 9 strikeouts. The fastball velocity was up. Scott, we'll start with you. Bieber, Urias, Robbie Ray. What do you make of these three?
Very encouraged by Robbie Ray. This was another one. The velocity was basically back to where we saw it last year.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, you know, we just need to see him get those walks down a little bit. Him having 3 in this start is not ideal. It's not what he was doing last year, but I was more worried about the stuff itself, and it seems like it's come all the way back. So I would say of the three now, you know, a week ago I might have said Robbie Ray was the one I'm most worried about. Now he's probably the one I'm least worried about. Bieber's the one I'm most worried about now at this point. It was good to see his velocity tick up a little.
But still.
But not back to where it was.
Still well below even pre-2020
right
marks.
Right. So I don't think if it is a mechanical thing, as he and the Guardians have maintained, he hasn't figured it out yet.
Weird thing about this start is he went super fastball and cutter heavy.
This is Shane Bieber?
Bieber threw those pitches a combined 66% of the time. Yeah, my math right on that. Entering the game, he had thrown his four-seamer about 35% of the time and his cutter about 10% of the time. So he had largely given up on the cutter last season. And 2020 was really the only year he threw it much. He threw it 15% of the time that year, but it was, I don't know, it was just an okay pitch for him. Like, it got hit somewhat hard, you know, worst of his pitches, strike or swing and miss rate was fine, but I don't quite know what to make of that. Because, you know, I think as we've talked about him this season, I think the sense was that if he was going to be successful, and this is Shane Bieber, it would be slider and knuckleball or curveball. Knuckle curve heavy, and that's not what we saw in this start. And I don't know. I'm worried about him. I would still be trying to sell on name value.
Again, that is Shane Bieber, so you can look to sell there. We had a nice pitcher's duel on Friday. Just an awesome performance by both Pablo Lopez and Corbin Burns. Lopez hit this most recent start, 7 innings, 1 run, 11 strikeouts to 0 walks. He had 20 swinging strikes. The ERA is down to 1.05. Corbin Burns, 7 innings, 1 run, 7 strikeouts to 0 walks. On the other side, he had 16 swinging strikes. This is his 6th straight quality start following opening day where he was just kind of mediocre, but the Sierra and the swinging strike rate are actually better this year for Corbin Burns than they were last year when he won the Cy Young. So he's absolutely been awesome. Chris, anything to add on Pablo Lopez and Corbin Burns?
No, I mean, I guess Clayton Kershaw would be the kind of cautionary tale to just remind yourself that just because Pablo Lopez is pitching really well right now doesn't mean that the reasons we were a little scared off of him coming into the season, namely the history of shoulder injuries, it doesn't mean that he's past that just because he's pitching well, but he's a top 20 pitcher for me right now.
All right, let's move into some starter sit pitchers. These are kind of fringy options. They're started in less than 70% of CBS leagues right now. So should we get them in our lineups? We'll start with Tyler Mahle, who delivered his first quality start of the season at the Pirates this weekend. 6 innings, 2 runs, 8 strikeouts. Scott, would you start Mahle at Cleveland this week?
I'd lean against it.
Fair enough. Let's move over to Eduardo Rodriguez. He turns in his second quality start in a row, this one against the Orioles. 6 2/3 shutout, 4 walks to 3 strikeouts. You don't love that. He's at Tampa Bay this week. Chris, what do you think about that for Erod?
My preference would be to avoid him. He just can't get swings and misses right now. And I don't know what's going on there. His swing and miss, his whiff rate on his four-seam fastball has basically been cut in half from last year. Changeup swing and miss rate has fallen off. So I don't know. I'm definitely a little concerned about it right now. He's still getting pretty good results on balls in play, but, you know, would like to see that change. The swings and misses, I mean, not okay. The quality of contact.
Logan Webb, this one might surprise you. He's only started in 68% of CBS leagues right now. He did turn in another quality start on Friday. 6 innings, 1 run, 3 walks to 1 strikeout. Don't love that. The problem is he's at Coors Field this week, Scott. Do you get Logan Webb out of your lineups?
I think if you can. I mean, he hasn't been that impressive. He's been okay because the ground ball rate is so exemplary.
Yeah.
But no, he hasn't looked nearly as effective as the guy we saw down the stretch last year. And at Coors Field, yeah, I think that's reason enough to, if you can get him out of your lineup, do so.
The whiff rate on Logan Webb's slider has basically fallen in half. It was 47% last season. It's 24.6%. I don't really know what to make of that because spin rate, velocity, that stuff all looks mostly the same. And looks like the movement profile is pretty much the same. So I'm not sure what's going on there. But that's if you're wondering why Logan Webb isn't getting strikeouts like he did last season, that's the primary culprit.
Paul Blackburn has back-to-back quality starts. He lowered his ERA to 1.67 this weekend. Chris, would you play Blackburn at the Angels?
I mean, we've said no on everyone else so far, so at some point we're going to have to start someone. But I'm pretty skeptical overall on Blackburn. So I'll say yes, but I don't love him.
All right. George Kirby was not as successful in his second start at the Mets. He gave up 3 runs, only one of those earned on over 4 innings pitched. He's only started in 30% of CBS leagues right now. Scott, what do you think at Boston this week for George Kirby?
Did you just feel pressured to say yes to Blackburn against the Angels? You felt like you had to say yes?
A little bit. I mean, look, I would rather start him than Logan Webb. I would rather start him than Eduardo Rodriguez. I would probably rather start him than Tyler Malley. So, yeah, okay. That's a little bit of that, but, you know.
He would be at the bottom of that rank list for me, for what it's worth.
I'm just kidding.
I mean, part of the issue with this exercise is just like these are all one-start pitchers who are, by definition, not must-start. So. Yep. It's just who else do you have is really the ultimate question. So it's hard to give a decisive answer, yes or no, on any of them. But I think
I'll give one.
I think George Kirby is the most interesting to me, even though his second start was lackluster. The Red Sox are a decent matchup. And I think the stuff is really good. And you at least know he's going to throw strikes.
Hyunjin Ryu made his return over the weekend at Tampa Bay. He allowed 1 run over 4 2/3. He is up against the Cincinnati Reds this week, which is a good matchup. What do you think there, Chris?
I will give a definitive yes on this one.
All right.
It's the Reds. You know?
It is Ryu, though.
I I will start him against the Reds.
All right. Trevor Rogers finally has that standout strikeout performance that we were looking for. He gives up 1 run over 5 1/3, 8 strikeouts against the Brewers this weekend. He is at home against the Braves. What do you think, Scott? Trevor Rogers?
I mean, he's not must start. I wish more of the whiffs that he got in this last start were on the changeup.
Yep.
Because that's supposed to be his strikeout pitch. And it wasn't in this start. It hasn't been all year. So I don't know that he's fixed, and the Braves, you know, they can do some damage. So, you know, most cases I think I'd probably start Trevor Rogers, but, you know, weigh your options.
What about Luis Castillo? Again, another slow start so far this season. He allowed 3 runs over 5 innings pitched. He only had 6 swinging strikes at the Pirates this weekend. Chris, would you start Luis Castillo at the Blue Jays?
I would try not to.
Yeah. Last one on this list.
I would rather start Hyunjin Ryu.
Yeah. The velo for Luis Castillo fastball down 2 miles per hour compared to last year, which again, his velo started off slow last year and then slowly, you know, continued to rise throughout the season. But so far, not so good for Luis Castillo. Tristan McKenzie is the last one on this list. He gave up 3 runs over 7 innings against the Twins on Sunday. 15 swinging strikes. He likes to see that. Scott, would you start him against the Tigers? That's Tristan McKenzie.
Yeah, I'd lean yes on that.
Yeah, I like that one too. Let's wrap up with some leftovers from the weekend, some studs being studs. Part one, starting pitcher edition. Max Scherzer, another strong start, 7 innings, 1 run, 6 strikeouts. Zach Gallen had his 4th straight quality start, this one up against the Cubs. Framber Valdez, he makes it 4 straight quality starts, this one at the Nationals. And then Justin Verlander, 2 scoreless outings in a row. He got his swinging strikes up to 17 in this start. That was a season high for Verlander. Chris, anything on Scherzer, Gallen, Valdez, Justin Verlander?
No, I would just, with Gallen in particular, I think the caveat that we threw out there with Pablo Lopez applies for him as well. Just because he's healthy right now doesn't mean he's going to continue to stay healthy, and I think there's still a buy or a sell high window with Zach Gallen if, you know, someone is willing to pay something like full price for what he's doing right now.
I gotta say though, there's nobody I feel wronger about than Zach Gallen at this point in the season. Like, I did not expect him to even look good. He's looked really good.
Yeah, I'm surprised at the velocity being up. I mean, it was so interesting because he came back from the injury last year and was throwing a ton of pitches, and so clearly he was feeling good. But yeah, I definitely didn't expect this kind of production from him.
I think the control is what stands out most for me with Zach Gallen. Yeah. He has 1 walk or less in 5 of 6 starts this season. And entering 2022, he was averaging over 3 walks per 9. So out of nowhere, yeah, the velo is up. The control is much better for Zach Gallen. He's going deep into his starts. It all looks really good without, you know, and then you remember that he has these injuries kind of lurking. So keep that in the back of your mind. Studs being studs, part two, Nasty Nestor. He was at it again at the White Sox on Sunday. 8 innings, 1 run, 7 strikeouts, 2-0 walks. Lowers his ERA to 1.35. Frankie Montas gives up 2 runs over 6 innings against the Angels. 12 strikeouts against that Angels lineup. Very impressive. And then Aaron Nola as well. He was at the Dodgers on Sunday. 7 innings, 2 runs, 8 strikeouts in this one. Gets the ERA down to 3.64. Scott, anything on Nola, Montas, Nestor Cortez?
I mean, not really anything new to say analysis-wise. Frankie Montas, I think with the 22 whiffs in this game, he now has both the best ground ball rate and the best swinging strike rate of his career. So if you needed more reason to buy into him, I'll add that.
I guess I'll be the wet blanket and say that I don't think Nestor Cortez is going to continue to be this like hugely impactful pitcher. I think he's probably going to be decent, but like,
get out, Chris.
He's got a 33% strikeout or 34% strikeout rate right now, and without a swing and a whiff rate over 40, or he doesn't have a whiff rate on over 28% on any of his pitches. So I have a hard time seeing this being like, do we really think a guy with a 12% whiff rate on his most used breaking ball, his slider, is going to keep throwing 34% strikeout rate? Like, really?
No.
Or anywhere close to it? Like, I get it. It's a great story. He's super fun to watch. I love watching him pitch. I hope I'm wrong, but I feel like he's one of the more obvious sell high pitchers out there right now.
I just don't know if you'll get anything for him, because I think a lot of people probably think along the same lines as you, Chris. Or maybe
look, man. Well, I think. Yeah, I mean, I haven't moved. Like, I'm not viewing Nestor Cortez as like a Cy Young candidate or anything. You're right. He has like 12K per 9 right now. And that's obviously hard to believe. But like, just in a direction, like, do you think he's good or do you think he's bad? Do you think he's closer to must start or streamer? I think closer to must start is what I'd say. And that's probably enough for me to hold on to him. But if you think you can shop him like an ace, of course.
Yeah, like I view him more like a top 50 pitcher than a top 30 pitcher.
Yeah. I think that makes perfect sense.
If I can get top 30 pitcher value for him, you know, that's something that I would do.
Sure. Fair enough. Some hitting leftovers from the weekend. I'll give credit where it's due. I'm always ragging on Joey Gallo. 5 hits over his last 5 games, including 2 homers. He's got 7 games this week, just 1 lefty on the schedule. Whit Merrifield, a strong weekend in Coors Field. He needed that. 5 hits, 1 homer, 1 steal. Taylor Ward had 6 hits this weekend as well, including his 8th home run. Rafael Devers is heating up his last 7 games. He's batting .467 with 2 homers. I don't know what has gotten into Gene Segura, but he is on fire. In the month of May, he's batting .432 with 4 homers, 3 steals, a .1217 OPS. It's like he turned into Fernando Tatis for the month of May. I don't really know what's going on, but he's been amazing. Julio Rodriguez with the first 4-hit game of his young career. He goes 4-for-4 on Sunday's second home run of the season. His batting average is now up to .264. Colton Wong had a monster game on Sunday. He went 2-for-2 with 3 walks, a homer, 2 steals. He's now up to 3 home runs overall, 8 stolen bases. Adolis Garcia had a double dong on Sunday. The batting average leaves a lot to be desired, but he does have 6 home runs and 4 steals. And Mookie Betts had a strong weekend. 5 hits, 2 homers. He is up to 7 home runs and 3 steals himself. Some bullpen updates for the Tigers. Gregory Soto on Friday entered with a 2-run lead. He hit 2 batters. Then he had a walk. He got pulled for Will Vest, who picked up his first save. Numbers look really strong for Will Vest. And then on Saturday, Soto did bounce back with his 5th save. Scott, you and I were talking beforehand. In some deeper leagues, we were looking into Will Vest this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, those deeper 15-team roto leagues where whenever a new save source emerges, they go for like a quarter of your FAB budget. You have to kind of be a little more proactive in identifying these guys early. And Will Vest is a guy I made a point to add for a couple of bucks because Soto has struggled with his control his whole year, his whole career, but especially this year. And it's worth pointing out AJ Hinch mentioned that Soto is still his closer after Vest got this save. So he wasn't to the point of thinking of making a change yet, but Vest has been their best reliever this year. And so if he was going to make a change, that seems likely it would be to him.
All right, for the Mariners this weekend, Paul Sewald on Friday night recorded 4 outs over the 7th and 8th innings. Drew Steckenrider picked up his 2nd save of the season. It was his first since April 8th. So
I mean, that was the Sewald save on May 10th was their first since, I believe, April 22nd.
Yeah.
Just as a team. The Mariners had been in a total free fall. So, I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird. And then on Sunday, So Paul Sewald pitched in the 8th. Drew Steckenrider started the 9th inning with a 3-run lead. It was 8-5. He gave up 4 hits, 2 runs. So he was in for the save, but then he got pulled for Diego Castillo, who recorded the final 2 outs for his 2nd save. The Mariners just seems completely up in the air right now when it comes to saves. For Tampa Bay, Brooks Raley pitched in the 8th inning on Friday night. He gave up 3 hits and a run without recording an out. Andrew Kittredge relieved him. He got out of it. Jason Adam, who also has great numbers this season, picked up his first save in the 10th inning of that game. And then Kittredge bounced back on Saturday, picked up his 5th save. The Rays are kind of doing Rays things right now, but it's been Kittredge and Raley and now Jason Adam is just a name to watch there. For Kansas City, Josh Staumont pitched in the 8th inning on Friday. Scott Barlow picked up his 3rd save. And then same thing on Sunday. Scott Barlow picked up his 4th save.
I feel like Barlow's settling in here.
I don't think that's a split at this point. Staumont doesn't have a save since the 19th of April.
And he's been pretty shaky, so it's understandable why they've gone away from him.
I dropped Staumont for Will Vest in that deeper categories league, so I'm all right making that move. For the Diamondbacks, Mark Melanson picked up his 7th save on Friday, and then on Saturday, he gave up 3 runs on 2 hits, 2 walks. On Sunday, Ian Kennedy was pitching in the 9th inning in a tie game. He gave up 2 hits and a run. He takes the loss. Diamondbacks bullpen, I don't think either one is very good, Mark Melanson and Ian Kennedy, but it's, you know, we're kind of running out of time here for Mark Melanson. For the Cardinals on Saturday, Ryan Helsley, he pitched in the 7th inning. He got the next 5 outs in that game. Giovanni Gallegos pitched in the 9th. Rowan Wick picked up 3 saves over the last 4 games for the Cubs. David Robertson is currently on the COVID IL. And then for the Twins on Sunday, Emilio Pagan gave up a hit, but he struck out one for his fifth save. His ERA is down to 1.54. To stream,
he does have like a walk per inning, though, just to point out. Pagan does.
Okay.
If I could sneak in another sneaky potential closer pickup,
do it.
Matt Barnes, his most recent outing over the weekend, the velocity was back. And that's, I think, what Alex Cora was waiting to see from him. So we'll see if it holds up in the next outing, but good early indication there from Barnes.
Streamers for Monday. Let's start with Kyle Bradish up against the Yankees, Alex Fiedo at the Rays, Jake Odorizzi at the Red Sox, John Gray versus the Angels, Brad Keller versus the White Sox, Chris Archer at the A's, and Zach Logue versus the Twins.
To put this into context, all those one-star pitchers we said no to earlier are yeses over these guys, okay?
Scott hates just streamers.
And these are all mostly going to be two-star guys.
Yeah, I think Brad Keller would be my choice from this list.
Yeah, I don't love anybody.
Yeah, I would try to avoid it.
I think Fiedo is kind of interesting. Same thing with Zach Logue, but I'd rather stay away. Tuesday, yeah. Connor Overton at Cleveland, JT Brubaker at the Cubs, Adrian Hauser versus the Braves, Chad Kuhl versus the Giants, James Caprillion versus the Twins. In case you thought it couldn't get worse, Scott.
It got worse.
Yeah, no, it's bad.
You're making me start somebody Hauser, but I don't want to do it.
Don't do it. All right, we're going to wrap there. For Scott, Chris, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.